Pedal to the metal. Presidential candidates moving past the holiday, accelerating campaigning for Iowa's presidential preference caucuses. Insights from two experienced campaign strategists on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
I'm a dad.
I am a mom.
I'm a kid.
I'm a kid at heart. I'm a banker.
I'm an Iowa banker.
No matter who you are, there is an Iowa banker who is ready to help you get where you want to go. Iowa Bankers, allowing you to discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks.
Iowa Communications Network. The availability of high-speed broadband service is essential to fulfilling the promise of a connected Iowa. ICN's Broadband Matters campaign showcases the importance of delivering broadband to all corners of Iowa. Information is available at broadbandmatters.com. Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org. The Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
The Arlene McKeever Endowment Fund at the Iowa Public Television Foundation, a fund established to support local programming on Iowa Public Television. For decades, Iowa Press has brought you political leaders and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Now celebrating more than 40 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television, this is the Friday, January 1 edition of Iowa Press. Here is Dean Borg.
Happy New Year. 2016, long-awaited election year, is here. And we're just a month away now from the first-in-the-nation Iowa presidential preference caucuses. Telephone surveys, campaign volunteers knocking on doors, candidates scurrying from rally to rally. It's high stakes. And we invited two veterans of this kind of frenzy to the Iowa Press table today. Brad Anderson directed Barack Obama's 2012 Iowa campaign and worked for John Edwards in 2004. During the current election cycle, Eric Wilson was involved in Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's bid for the presidency and past caucus campaigns with Mike Huckabee, George W. Bush, Michelle Bachmann, and way back in 1988, Eric, with now Vice President Joe Biden. So welcome to Iowa Press.
It's great to be here. Thank
and,
you.
And Brad, welcome to Iowa Press. Nice to have you back.
Yeah, thank you, Dean. It's great to be here.
And across the table, two people you know well, Des Moines Register political columnist Kathy Obradovich and Radio Iowa's news director Kay Henderson.
Eric, everyone always says there's three tickets out of Iowa toward New Hampshire. Are there actually three tickets, or are there two tickets, an establishment and an anti-establishment candidate, or maybe five tickets this year since the field is so large? What's your assessment?
You know, I thought probably 5-6 weeks ago there would be five tickets out given the size of the field. I've kind of come back to that sentiment that there are three tickets out, and we're probably looking at Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, and I'm not sure who that third ticket is at this point, but it would be the establishment candidate. So perhaps two non-establishment, anti-establishment candidates and one establishment candidate, and we'll see who that is.
So who among the establishment do you see as moving?
Interesting piece in the New York Times on Thursday was talking about Governors Bush and Christie and then Senator Rubio seeing Iowa as a, quote, playground of opportunity, that they do think that there's a large segment of traditional mainstream voters, particularly in the eastern part of the state, Cedar Rapids, Davenport area, that are more business and fiscal-minded Republicans, the farm vote over in that area, that are kind of more focused on fiscal issues than on social conservative issues. And so they see an opportunity to gain some momentum. I know there's been some conversation that, you know, it's first place is all that matters in a year like this. But I really think if one of those establishment candidates does come to the fore, that's going to benefit their campaign down the road.
Turning to the Democrats, Brad, you have endorsed Hillary Clinton.
I have.
If there are three tickets out, that means everybody survives, including Martin O'Malley.
Everybody's going to New Hampshire.
What's your assessment? Do you think O'Malley can stay in the race if he loses and does very poorly here? And secondarily, Bernie Sanders this week in Burlington said he has a real shot at winning Iowa. Do you agree?
I do. I think, first of all, I don't envy Eric at all trying to predict what's going to happen on his side. I really don't. I mean, it has been really just a very unpredictable year on the Republican side. But, you know, on the Democratic side, I think you're seeing a lot of enthusiasm for both candidates, despite the media glare really being focused on Donald Trump. And so you're seeing thousands of people continuing to show up for Bernie Sanders events, which, you know, is really been going on since the summer. And then you had that magical event at Kyoto where you had an event where 700 people showed up to see Hillary Clinton in a town of 900. More than half the town came out to see Secretary Clinton. So I think you are seeing enthusiasm. I think the question for O'Malley is he going to really catch fire? Because that, you know, Dave Nagel always says the key to winning the caucuses is organize, 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 and catch fire at the end. The question is he going, because they've built a great organization, the O'Malley team has. The question is he going to catch fire? And that is the moment where your message clicks, the crowds are clicking, and it is really something that is kind of intangible. But you know it when it happens.
Kathy, before I go on to you, I'm going to go back. Eric, you said something. You said earlier five candidates you thought might have a momentum out of Iowa. Now you've changed that and three. What caused you to change?
I think the strength that we're seeing from Senator Cruz's campaign, the sustained strength from Mr. Trump's campaign also. There have been a lot of speculation that he's drawing a lot of folks to his events, but they don't have the ground game necessarily to convert those folks on caucus night. I disagree with that. I think with folks like Chuck Lauder, Stephanie Lauder, who have been around this process a long time, combined really with the enthusiasm and the new folks like Tanner Gertz, I think that they're taking the steps that are necessary to turn out folks on caucus night. So I think we're going to see two very strong upper 20s, low to mid 30s finishes for those two. And then I think the question is, who's the third place candidate? And perhaps it's that establishment person we talked about earlier. And then the rest of the field back in the single digits. The possibility still that Governor Huckabee might break out or somebody in that very low tier might break out. I think we'll know more about that around January 10th, January 12th. But I think we're back to kind of a three tickets out of Iowa.
Well, let's talk about the ground game for a second. We heard this week that Jeb Bush is dropping a bunch of ads and putting that money into bodies that he's sending to early states, including Iowa. Is that a smart strategy for him, do you think?
Yeah, I think they have to do that at this point. They just have not been able to move the needle. I don't know that TV commercials are going to do all that much. Their super PAC is going to be running a lot of commercials as it is. And in fact, on Wednesday night, that was the first night I saw a new Bush commercial that was really very critical of Marco Rubio. So they are clearly trying to establish themselves as that, third, hopefully, and I think in their eyes, that third place finisher, or at least the top establishment finisher. And so they've got to turn out those people that are supporting them.
What do you look for when you're trying to evaluate a candidate's ground game? I mean, you can watch from the inside, but if you're watching from the outside, how do you establish? Is it the number of phone calls you're getting? How do you know whether they've got a good ground game?
Great question. And part of that is the enthusiasm that you're getting back. I remember in 2008 with Governor Huckabee, you know, when you've got people walking through the door, when you've got people that say, I want to sign up, I want to do something, don't just put my name on your list of supporters, but give me something to do. That ability to drill down, as Brad knows, to go beyond your county chairs to your precinct captains to, okay, we've got four or five people in this precinct that are willing to work. So it really is just building brick by brick an organization that has a very strong foundation and then again catches fire there at the end.
And Brad, we're talking about Bernie Sanders and his ability possibly to win Iowa, but despite lagging behind Hillary Clinton in the polls almost all year. That comes down to organization, does it not? Or is it something else? Is it enthusiasm?
It comes down to both. The job for the campaigns right now, there are two main jobs going on in these last 30-some days. One is for the campaigns, and so both campaigns, all three campaigns on the Democratic side, have been building these massive organizations over the last 8 or 9 months. That means precinct captains, volunteers, opening offices. Now comes the time to test it. Tom Harkin is a huge believer in testing your organization. In fact, when I was the Obama State Director, the first question he asked me was, how are you testing these guys? How are you testing them every day? So what they're going to be doing are they're going to be doing dry runs. They're going to get staging locations. They're going to do all the things they have to do to test their organization for that last 4 days. And the last 4 days leading up to the caucuses is all about turnout. It's all about turnout. So the size of your organization, really, it's kind of tough to see from the outside. But you know it on the inside. You know if your people are trained. You know if you've got your precinct captains. You know where they are. And I've talked to the campaigns. For the most part, their precinct captains are set. They've got them in place. We have 1,681 precincts. They've got them in place in most of the areas in Iowa. Now comes time to test it.
How much ground can you actually make up? Say, let's say you're lagging behind your opponent by 4 points in the polls. Can you make that up by having a better organization? Can you make up 8 points? I mean, where is that sweet spot where, that you can actually eat up a lead in the polls?
You know, that is a great question. It is a great question, and it's something that I actually can't answer. But what a ground game can do is, like I said, you need two things. You need the ground game, and then you need the candidate to catch fire. And I'll just give you a good example. So in 2004, I was working for Edwards, and Edwards did catch fire at the end. But the reason we were able to come in second place was because we had the ground game in place to capture that fire. And so I'll never forget when Ed Skinner, who's since passed away, but from Altoona, endorsed Edwards. We had, I think, 1,500, 2,000 people show up at this Altoona event. And we would have never been able to capture all their info, sign everyone in, if we didn't already have a ground game in place.
But social media has even changed that ground game in this cycle, hasn't it, Brad?
It has a little bit, but you still, nothing beats one-on-one conversations, nothing beats door knocking, nothing beats phone calls. Social media has changed the game. Not as much as people think.
Mm-hmm. And I think to Brad's point about the size of an organization, I remember, again, in 2008 with Governor Huckabee, we had, I think, 12 or 13 people on staff, and we'd look down the street and we'd keep hearing stories about, Hillary Clinton had 200 people on staff, or, Senator Obama had 200 people on staff, and we'd be very envious. But the fact of the matter was we knew that we were moving numbers and we were building that ground game because it was a very organic. There was a lot of support for Mike Huckabee, out there, the grassroots, whether it was the homeschool folks, the evangelical voters, some of the Main Street Republicans. So the organization, to Brad's point, isn't as important as having those volunteers out there that get very excited about a candidate and are willing to go out and talk to their friends and neighbors face-to-face and close the deal.
I'm wondering what the most effective thing a campaign can do in 2016, and maybe if it's changed. And Brad, I'll start with you. I recently chatted with Paul Tews, who worked on Obama 08, and he said something really interesting. He said, people come for the candidate, but they stay for the campaign. How do you achieve that?
You know, the most effective thing a campaign can do is invest people that are going to invest themselves in the community. And Obama was just the master of that in 2008. You know, these people, they came in and they really talked to county chairs. They got to know people in the community. They didn't consider themselves above anyone, and they understood that the county chairs there probably knew more than they did coming in cold. So I think that is the most effective way that you can build an organization, is really investing yourself in the community. I can tell you what has stunned me, the story of 2015 is the total and complete ineffectiveness of super PACs. I'm one where I was legitimately convinced that in Iowa that these dollars being poured into these campaigns by super PACs were going to have an impact. I was wrong. They have had no impact. The Des Moines Register did a study. They said $27 million has been spent in Iowa by super PACs, a third of which went to candidates that have already dropped out, the other third to Jeb Bush, who's in single digits. They have not moved the needle at all. And,
what caused that, Brad?
Mm-hmm. Well, I like to credit the people of Iowa. I think this is not a state Dean, that you can come out and buy, especially a nameless organization that is trying to advertise on behalf of a candidate. It's not a state where you can win the caucuses on TV. We're talking about a very targeted, small universe of people that are going to caucus. And it is a state where one-on-one conversations still matter. And if someone knocks on your door and they say, I'm with Freedom for America Priorities PAC, people aren't going to pay attention to that. And so, I'm kind of pumped up about the fact that super PACs have had no impact.
Yeah, and I think to Kay's point that come for the candidate, stay for the organization thing, Tom Henderson, who's the former Polk County Democratic chair, has made that point before. But I think this cycle, there's the bigger question about in both parties. The question is, will Trump supporters stay if he's not the nominee? Will Bernie Sanders folks stay? There's a lot of I wasn't at the Democratic Jefferson Jackson dinner, but I had heard
missed
this.
Out.
I missed out. I would have been very popular there, I'm sure. But, I'd heard the story that a lot of the Sanders folks heard their candidate and left, and that there's some concern, will they stay? Obviously, in our party, the question is, if it's not, if we've attracted a lot of new folks with Donald Trump and he's not the nominee, will they stay? So I think that's going to be one of the big questions going into the general election. Will we see those sorts of things happen?
One of the questions, too, you talk about the effect of money. Mm-hmm. I just saw a Politico piece where it said that one of the worst predictions of 2015 was that money was going to make all the difference, mm-hmm. right? Yep. In Iowa, where do you put the smart money for the caucuses? I mean, I think there's smart money and stupid money spent in the caucuses. And maybe the super PAC was the stupid money. Where does money really make a difference in the caucuses?
I think staffing always is a big difference, and I think getting your candidate out. I mean, I've worked for candidates that have had a lot of money, George W. Bush, and the candidates that haven't had a lot of money, and it's a lot more fun to work for the guys that do have a lot of money, I'll tell you that. But always, I think, our spending, when it was getting the candidate connected with the voters, that was
very important.
But the last
two winners
of the
Iowa caucuses staffers were definitely not the ones who spent the most money.
Exactly. They were the ones that were out there and did the 99 counties and did the 99 counties again and made those tours. And so
That's Mike Huckabee and
Rick Santorum. And again, to Brad's point, we did think, I mean, I think virtually everyone thought that the super PACs were going to make a huge impact on this whole process. And again, Governor Perry had a lot of super PAC money. Governor Walker, Governor Jindal had super PAC money. Do you think they still might, though?
Is it still possible for super PACs to make a difference toward the end of the nomination process as opposed to, they certainly weren't helping at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But what about when it gets down to maybe two
Probably
people?
More so in the general. I think they probably do have that opportunity. We saw that in the Senate race, the Iowa Senate race last year with Bruce Braley and Joni Ernst. So perhaps when it's a more focused, concentrated race. But again, as it sorts out the caucus cycle and the primaries, to date, I think everybody's been surprised at their ineffectiveness.
People make a lot of noise about endorsements. I'm wondering about alliances. Harkening back to 2004 on caucus day, Kucinich announced, if I am not viable in any of these caucuses, I want my people to go over to Edwards. How crucial are those sorts of alliances, and what do those O'Malley people do? Because they could be a big factor in whether Hillary Clinton wins by single digits, or if they all go to Bernie Sanders, that could be a huge factor as well.
That is an excellent point. And I will never forget sitting in my caucus in 2004, because that alliance came out. It was, and really it was like the day or two before, and Kucinich just said it on CNN or something. Mm-hmm. Then I was sitting there, and in my caucus, when Kucinich was not viable, they literally got up and walked over to the Edwards as if on cue, and I couldn't believe it worked. I was like, oh my God, here we go.
Did they push him over the top over Hillary Clinton? Because they were so close.
This is in 04. Yeah,
okay.
This is what really pushed him into second place. I think it was helpful. For sure. I know it was, and certainly in my caucus, and we heard anecdotes all around the state of that. So that is a question of whether or not there's going to be some alliance between the O'Malley people and a candidate. I don't know. That's for the campaigns to decide. And again, with the Kucinich thing, that was a last-minute deal.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, and it was just because, the truth is, it was because Dennis and John Edwards were actually close friends,
but
believe
Eric,
it or not.
That brings up the point of late deciders, mm-hmm. and on caucus night even.
Exactly.
But can that skew yet your prediction?
You know, I don't think it affects us as much. Brad, one of the things I never envied for the Democratic campaign managers was that need to get to 15%. And so when I'm managing a Republican campaign, a vote is a vote is a vote anywhere in the state. I don't have to worry about hitting that 15% threshold. And so perhaps, you know, we may see a little of that movement. I think a lot of folks are going to decide awfully late, and they will move around. But I think that a lot of the support for Cruz and a lot of the support for Trump is solid. It's going to stay there. But on the Republican side, again, our challenge always was turnout, not necessarily worrying about that 15% threshold.
Yeah. Eric, back to alliances. It seems as if some of these super PACs are starting to try to knock down Ted Cruz, who's perceived as the front runner here, to benefit Rubio. And we're even hearing that maybe some of the Huckabee and Santorum people are moving in that direction to sort of have an alliance to dislodge Cruz. Can that thing work?
You know, it may affect around the margins. I don't. I think the folks that have supported Senator Cruz and are supporting him are the result of a very smart approach that they've taken. They've built that foundation very slowly, very deliberately. They've worked the evangelical community very strongly. I know there's questions whether the ethanol issue is going to be able to cut into Senator Cruz's support. Again, I don't see a lot of those folks who support Senator Cruz is worried about ethanol. When you've got Congressman King who is supporting Senator Cruz, ethanol is not, I'm sure, going to be as crucial a deciding factor as it is maybe the ethanol hope.
There's also some last debates, and what we've seen so far, I think, is the debates have been pretty influential. Is the winner of the last debate the guy who's going to catch fire for the caucuses?
You know, somebody who does well very close to the caucuses, I think it's going to bump their numbers a little bit. Maybe, again, that's an opportunity for one of those establishment candidates to break through at the end. So we will. To Dean's point, we will see a lot of movement here at the end. But, again, I think there's so much of a gap between first, second, and then the rest of the field that I don't know that it's going to affect those top two.
Do you think the debates have taken attention or focus away from Iowa on the Republican side?
Perhaps a little bit. I don't think too much. I think they've made Iowa a lot more important in some respects. We saw with the candidate that I worked for, Governor Walker, who goes into that first debate with these high expectations that he's leading all these polls. He doesn't do very well. Well, Iowa becomes all that more important to him. And then when he doesn't perform well out in Iowa and the questions come up about, well, he's not debating well, he's not campaigning well in Iowa, it sort of becomes kind of a snowball effect. So they do have an impact, but I think that impact has been especially strong here in Iowa.
And Brad, the debates don't seem to have been driving polls necessarily on the Democratic side. They have been driving rhetoric where they've been arguing about the debates. Do you see the debates actually having a big influence as we get toward the end?
Well, part of that is we don't have Donald Trump. and the other part is they're on a Saturday, which the DNC, which I don't understand why they scheduled it the way they did. But I think our debates have, there's no question, been more serious in tone, been more substantive. And maybe that doesn't drive the viewership that some of the antics on the Republican side do. But to your point on smart money and stupid money, which I think is a very good point. Say Rubio does great in the next debate, right? And someone in Burlington wants to volunteer. Rubio, for the life of me, I don't understand why more Republicans don't invest in a ground game when they have the money. Mm-hmm. And if you think, oh my gosh, Rubio did awesome in that debate, I want to go volunteer, where do you go?
Where do you go?
And that is what I mean by if you build the organization and your candidate gets hot at the end, to capture that can make all the difference in the world in Iowa.
Yeah.
And I can't think of, now you're seeing Jeb finally mm-hmm. investing in a ground game, but there really is just, he's got 20 people now. Both Sanders and Clinton have more than 100, have offices all mm-hmm. across the state. Just such a difference in organization between mm-hmm. on the Democratic side and the Republican side, and I don't understand why that is.
Great point, and it's been that way for a while. When the voter has to go out and look for the candidate, they get tired after a while. They do give up. And so having that robust network of offices, I think, does make a big difference for the Democrats.
Eric, you've sort of given us a prediction mm-hmm. earlier in your remarks. I'm mm-hmm. wondering if this is the last Iowa caucus if Donald Trump or Ted Cruz are the victor.
Quick response. We're out of time.
It would be if Jeb Bush wins the nomination.
Brad, do you predict that Hillary Clinton will win, and by how large a margin? You're supporting her.
I predict she's going to win, and I think the margin doesn't matter. I think a win is a win is a win on the Democratic side.
And we're out of wins here right now. Thank you so much for being with us. And before we go, a programming reminder. The first in a series of special Iowa caucus-related programming on Iowa Public Television debuts Monday, January 4th. It's called Caucus Iowa, Journey to the Presidency, brand new documentary film following more than four decades of caucus history with new interviews of former presidential candidates, campaign managers, and Iowans, alongside newly digitized footage from archived material not viewed for decades. So you'll want to see it. It's Caucus Iowa, Journey to the Presidency on Iowa Public Television next week. We'll be back next week, another edition of Iowa Press, 7:30 Friday night, noon on Sunday. Happy New Year. I'm Dean Borg. Thanks for joining us.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
I'm a veteran.
I'm a builder.
I'm a volunteer.
I am a teacher.
I'm a banker.
I'm an Iowa banker.
No matter who you are, there is an Iowa banker who is ready to help you get where you want to go. Iowa Bankers, allowing you to discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks.
Iowa Communications Network. ICN's Broadband Matters campaign advocates for access to high-speed broadband in all corners of Iowa, for education, public safety, health care, government, and economic development. Information is available at broadbandmatters.com.
Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org. The Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
The Arlene McKeever Endowment Fund at the Iowa Public Television Foundation, a fund established to support local programming on Iowa Public Television.